Can you hear me?
No? Yes? Huh. Okay, so the problem was that we didn't record the sound, but we have the reserve solution. No problem. Can you hear? Must be very close. Okay. That's a big problem with these microphones. We continue where we stopped. Yes, but then you will not hear me. That's a problem. Not. Okay. Now, next time we shall have to wear helmets and, you know, like astronauts. Okay, so we continue where we stopped. Target-based integrity verification systems, they check hash values of the protected files. So we have seen that. Now, another classification is into misuse and anomaly detection. And we said misuse detection actually collects signatures. So you have to know the attacks. You gather information about indicators of intrusion, which are signatures, in a database. It's a knowledge base of an IDS. And then you determine whether such indicators can be found in incoming data, for which you need what? Search. You see? You have to search for indicators of attacks in data. I don't think you will hear me. Okay, so to perform misuse detection, we need the following things. First, know the attacks. So a good understanding of what constitutes a misuse behavior. So why it is called misuse, that's a very old name. And because of that, it's better to say malicious or something. So these are intrusion patterns or signatures, sometimes in very different forms like rules. Then you need a reliable record of user activity. So you have to connect to your network and get the information from the network. Finally, you need a reliable technique for analyzing that record of activity, which is very often pattern matching or search. So this is actually search for the signatures in traffic. The same as antivirus. So on the slide 22, you have the schematic of this. So you have an analysis engine, which is usually pattern matching search. Pattern matching is search with a feedback. So in pattern matching, you want to match not just one string, but several strings that are similar. And then you have the database of intrusion patterns or signatures. And from this side, you get activities, which are packets from your network. And you try to find the intrusion patterns in these activities. And here you have a typical signature, which resembles English sentences. If source IP is equal to the destination IP, then this is the land attack. Land attack is an attack that is 20 years old, which actually was dangerous for Windows 95 system. So that was a long time ago. But this is just an example. They all look like this. So, what you need is to reliably detect known attacks. So, not the zero-day attacks. So, the zero-day attacks cannot be discovered by this. Now, what you can do is to try to discover, to detect attacks that are similar to the old ones. The script kiddies, maybe you have heard that term. So they play with known attacks and they modify traffic somehow and launch them as new without understanding what they do. So that's why they are called script kiddies. But also serious attackers can do the same thing because, as we said, normal and intrusive activities must have different evidence. And if the evidence difference is so small, then it's difficult to detect it. The problem with misuse detection is the false positives. So sometimes they will give you the signal that something is wrong, that there is an attack, without the attack being in progress. So that's called false positive. To reduce the number of false positives, unfortunately, you cannot eliminate false positives without affecting true positives, which is the detection. It's also a theoretical result. We cannot get into such details, but unfortunately, it's not possible to have probability or false positive rate 0 and true positive rate 1. You cannot do that on a real system. So the more true positives, unfortunately, the more false positives. So if you reduce the number of false positives, you will probably also reduce the number of true positives. Now, you must get some compromise, so some trade-off between the false positives and true positives, and you do that by careful adjustments of the IDS parameters to reduce this number. For each new attack, the zero-day attack, once it happens, it is known, then you make a signature and put it in the database, so in the future it will be detected. But at the time when it is launched, first time, you cannot detect it. So that's a very, very big issue with misuse detection systems. The consequence of this is the growth of the signature database. So each new attack requires that you add a new record to your database. And then, in the worst case, you have to search through the whole database each time. So per packet, yes. It's very similar to the operation of the antivirus systems. Yeah, it's the same concept. So every packet must be compared to each signature for the IDS to detect intrusions. Now, this is not always the case. Sometimes you compare sessions. So if you are talking about high-level protocols like HTTP, you don't use this. That would be this packet by packet. That's called stateless operation. So in stateless operation, you really compare every packet. But in stateful operation, you check whether something happens in a whole bunch of packets, in so-called session. Anyway, it may be computationally expensive as the bandwidth increases. Today, normal traffic is 1 gigabit per second network, and 10 years ago, it was 100 kilobits per second. And now even mobile devices have 1 gigabit per second. So that's really high bandwidth increase. When the bandwidth overwhelms the capabilities of the IDS, it causes the IDS to miss or drop, in this case, packets. So we get false negatives because the attack may be contained in these packets that we do not analyze at all. So that's why operation in real time is so important. If we don't analyze every unit of data, then in this unit of data that we don't analyze, there may be an attack. That's called false negative. So we believe that it's not attack, but it is. So that's the worst issue. That's actually the anchor. When you adjust the parameters of an IDS, you first resolve for this. So keep this false negative rate very close to zero. Of course, you cannot make it be zero all the time. So that was about misuse detection. Anomaly detection, on the other hand, actually requires that you define what is normal. Now, as we said, what is normal in this network may not be normal in a bank or in another system. So you have to carefully adjust these profiles of normality. And the basic assumption, of course, is that anomalous behavior indicates intrusion. This is actually not true. It may be the case when you define something that is normal that you just missed something in your definition, because the definition of normality is very difficult to give. So you will always miss some aspects of normality, and that will be the source of your false positives. Because it will be reported that something is abnormal, but it is actually just something that you haven't defined. These profiles, technically, of normality, are defined as sets of metrics, U measures. For example, CPU time, memory usage, network usage. So three parameters. And you say, these are our metrics. Now, each metric, you have to associate with it a threshold or a range of permitted values. So you can say, if the CPU consumption is more than 80%, that's bad. Or the CPU consumption should be between 20 and 50%. If it is less than 20, that's also bad. So you can define it as you wish. So that's an example of a range of values that you give to some metric. So instead of that, you can say just a threshold. So if you overwhelm 90% of something, that's bad. So you may have 20,000 of such metrics, and you will have a problem because this is resource consuming. In order for this anomaly detection to work, say, smoothly, you need that the users and the networks exhibit predictable, consistent patterns of system usage, which is never the case. So it's true that you every day log in into your session and read the newspapers, look at the weather forecast, etc., etc. But today you are busy, you cannot do this, you have to do something else immediately, so it will be reported as abnormal, even though you are not deleting files. Sometimes you have to delete files as well, but not the operating system files. So you see, there must be granularity in these rules. Because of that, this approach must take into account adaptations or changes in user behavior over time. So this is possible to take into account, but these sudden situations when you have to do something that is quite unusual, but it's legal, you cannot define at all, because nobody can predict what you will need tomorrow. So if you are late on your class, you have to run, and you have to skip some activities that you usually do. Nobody can predict that. Yes.
It is possible. It is possible, yeah.
Now, the completeness of anomaly detection depends on these metrics. So, what metrics you use, how you define them, and how you measure them. So, you must have what is called a rich set of metrics. So, it has to be rich enough to express as much of anomalous behavior as possible, if it happens. Actually, you have to express as much as possible of normal behavior. Then the discrepancy from that will be reported as anomalous. The great advantage of these systems is that they are capable of detecting zero-day attacks or new attacks. You cannot do that with misuse detection. So that's why it's worth using them. Another advantage is that if you have a misuse detection system, everybody knows what the misuse is. So there is a set of attacks, and there are organizations that maintain lists of vulnerabilities like CVE, Common Vulnerabilities and Exposures, or BugTrack. So there are organizations that define what is bad. Okay? Now, there may be exploits of this bad and consequently attacks. Now, these attacks are known and they can be put in your database. So, the attacker can do the same. He can replicate your database and then launch the traffic that is not in the database. That's quite possible, even practically, not just theoretically. Now, with the anomaly detection system, it's almost impossible, much more difficult, because normality is a very fluid concept, you know. So attack is something that is quite determined. So you know this is the attack number 1536, it does this and that, the consequence, the traffic is known, everything is known, all the details. On the other hand, with normality, you don't know. What is normal for me may not be normal for you. So it's quite a fluid concept. But this is also an advantage. The attacker cannot replicate your normality database, if any. You can define normality in many ways. But all these ways can be reduced to creating a huge database of normality. Although physically the database is not there. But you can have a set of rules. This is normal, and this is normal, and that is normal, and that is not normal, etc., etc. So this is what you do. Because the size of the database prevents it to be a real database, unlike misuse detection, where you always have a database. Physical. The big problem with anomaly detection, apart from all these advantages, so zero-day attack detection, impossibility of replicating the database, etc., etc., the big problem is the false positive. So the thing with this size of the database is what actually causes this, theoretically. Because if you must have a petabyte-sized database, you cannot do it. Now, how to resolve for this in an anomaly detection system? You have to reduce the size of this database somehow by eliminating some features, some metrics, by classifying the groups of similar metrics, etc., etc. That will reduce the size of the database, but that will also reduce the precision. Once it reduces the precision, you get more false positives. So that's a big issue. Because of that, these IDS systems have not found application as standalone systems at all in practice, because of huge number of false positives that are theoretically always there. In addition to that, if these thresholds are set too high, we may have false negatives. So you get crazy of these false positives, okay, just increase the threshold, but then you miss the events. It's very difficult to configure these systems. So you have an analysis engine on the slide 33. Activities are input. And profiles of normal behavior in the form of a database or anything else. And on that basis, analysis engine makes a decision whether it is an intrusion or not. So, to summarize this discussion, in misuse detection, the analysis engine alerts if the analyzed activity matches an entry in the signature database. So you must have a match. In anomaly detection, the analysis engine alerts if the analyzed activity does not match anything in the profiles of normal behavior, in the database. In both cases, you have to pass through the whole database, which is big. So, the problem with anomaly detection is that the number of normality indicators is much larger than the number of abnormality indicators. Because of that, you must have a huge database which you cannot have. Because of that, you need size reduction. And this size reduction makes that the profiles of normal behavior may not be precise enough, and that generates false positives. That's why, theoretically, IDS anomaly detection systems, they generate more false positives than misuse detection systems, and consequently they are not suitable for standalone use in practice. On the other hand, these systems are interesting because of zero-day attacks and because of impossibility of replicating the normality database, among other things. In addition, they are interesting because researchers like that, so they want to apply results of many sciences in this, like statistical methods, artificial intelligence, big data, that's the buzzword of today, mathematical abstractions of biological systems like neural networks, you have heard of it, simulation of immunological system. For example, you consider a computer system as a body that has immunity, or so-called process homeostasis. There was a PhD on this, so it's very interesting. So homeostasis, you know what it is. It's a tendency of anything to remain in the state in which it is. So living creatures or systems, computer programs, the processes, they tend to remain in the state in which they are. If you attack the process, you change the state. You see? So it's a kind of inertia that you want to use for maintaining security of your system. A very interesting idea. So it's all very interesting, but it generates false positives. That's the problem. So the proponents of anomaly detection and proponents of misuse detection, they of course quarrel because of this overlap. You see, activities known to be abnormal, we know for each attack, we know all the details for each attack that has happened before. We know everything about this. So it's a set of activities known to be abnormal. Now, activities believed to be normal, we said it's very fluid, so they may overlap with abnormality, which is false positives in this case. So what is the size of this area? That's the matter of this quarrel or discussion. The proponents of anomaly detection say it's small. And they stress the advantages, 0 day, etc., etc. The proponents of misuse detection, they sell the systems and they say, no, you will not be able to use it ever because this area is big. Too many false positives forever. I think they have a point. And we have explained why. Actually, the practical solution is let's combine the best of the two worlds. So now, wherever you have an antivirus solution, you have like anomaly detection as well. So they combine intrusion detection, virus detection, and anomaly detection, misuse detection, although they do not publish. This is closed software, you know. But you can imagine. If they say this is abnormal, you get the results. This is an abnormal activity, you shouldn't do this. That's an indication that they really combine the signatures and the definition of normality. So that was about intrusion detection. So how to detect attacks. And now we are going to talk about attacks. There are four phases in the attacking process. You first plan, then you perform some reconnaissance activity, then you perform the attack, and then you exploit what you achieved with this post-attack phase. You do this when you rob the bank as well. Well, not you, but the criminals. Okay? So they plan. They find out where the door is, how to enter the bank, how to get the money. Well, if it is the money, probably. Yeah. And what to do after that. So physical or data attack is the same. The process is in general cyclic. Once the attack is successful and successfully carried out, the attacker wants to exploit the attack further by, for example, penetrating further into the system or performing some other action in his favor, like altering data, get some zeros at the end of each figure in the bank account, etc., etc. So that's something that you do again. So a successfully completed attack makes possibility for another attack. So we have it like this, planning, reconnaissance, attack, post-attack, where planning and post-attack, they can be actually considered as one, because one of the post-attack activities may be planning of a new attack. So what about the planning phase? It can take many different forms. Usually you make use of a system legally. The same as the bank robbers. They open the account in the bank just to see how it looks like inside. That's from the Western movies, how they try to rob the banks. The same thing here. If a bank portal is a target, which is very, very often, any institution, but usually financial institutions because of understandable reasons, so the attacker will usually register as a user, open an account, or perform similar forms of lawful activity. Sometimes it's not possible to use the system before the attack, which is, for example, in a military system. They are not intended for use by civilians. So they are reserved for use only by specially authorized users. But if the service is publicly available, the best way to plan an attack is to register, which gives you the possibility to collect information about the system in a legal way. So if I were an attacker, I would do that. After the initial preparation, the attacker decides on the scope of the attack. So, what to do? What is your goal? Why are you attacking something? No. It may be denial of service, which is a stupid thing to do, but sometimes you have to do it, or you plan to do it for some other reasons, political or whatever. Escalation of legitimate privileges. That would be nice, because then you have access to the data that you otherwise do not have. Unauthorized access is actually related to that, because you cannot have access without escalating privileges. Or you may have it by guessing passwords of the others, but that's low level. So a high level of attack would be this, escalation of legitimate privileges. So you get administrator rights on the system. That would be really fine for an attacker. Data manipulation. Once I do that, I access the accounts of the others. I transfer some small amounts of money. That has happened before. So the perpetrators actually transferred a couple of cents from 1 million accounts, and they got substantial amount of money. So that has happened by getting this unauthorized access or escalating legitimate privileges. So in many cases, in most cases, the goal is money. The motivation behind an attack often dictates which of the goals are chosen. In war, this is the cyber warfare, you know, the enemy often wants denial of service. They want you not to use the system. Once you decide what your goal is, you have to decide how to do it. So you must discover some vulnerability of the victim in order for your attack to succeed. No? So the attacker discovers vulnerability, if any, of the target. Of course, in this course and in all the courses in this school, we consider only technical means of doing this, so not social engineering. So you can always take somebody and force him or her to give you the password. So that's not the point. The point is how to do it by technical means. Typical reconnaissance method is port scanning. So as we said, port scanning sounds like innocent activity, but the thing is that it may be a preparation for an attack. In this activity, you get to know which ports are active on the targeted host, and sometimes these ports may be active and not defended, in the sense that they are left active after the operating system installation and you don't use it, so you just forget about them. But the software that operates on these ports may be vulnerable. Even though you don't use it, it may be the backdoor to your system. They may be vulnerable because of a bug, which is the usual case, but it might be erroneous implementation of a protocol, which is not a bug. And why? because protocols are not defined as standards. So you have heard about this request for comments. That's how the protocols are defined. IP, TCP, they are all RFCs, request for comments. It's not an ISO standard. So not everybody is obliged to do it just like that. Because of that, there are differences. Each operating system actually implements them differently. And the Cortana says that you should actually switch it off. Okay, so the port that is vulnerable can be used as a backdoor for attackers. Now, of course, if you scan yourself for vulnerabilities, you should deactivate this port. This is hardening of the operating system. But not many people do that, only the professionals. The goal of the attacker in this phase is to narrow down the field of possible ways to attack. And why is that? If there are 65,000 ports, you are not going to launch traffic against each of them if they are closed. So you have to find an open one and a vulnerable one. So it must be open first and vulnerable second. Otherwise, you cannot do anything. Vulnerabilities are often present only in very specific versions of the software. That's why attackers are always interested in what version of the operating system you use. In addition to discovering how to penetrate into the system, the victim, the attackers attempt to do it in a clandestine way, you see, to hide themselves. In the case of port scanning, which is a typical activity here, if port scanning is detected, which in the original form of port scanning, the usual form, it is easy to detect. That may be the indicator of the possibility for an attack in the future. We have said that. And because of that, detecting port scans is one of the important activities in the process of intrusion detection. The attackers will try to find intelligent ways of port scanning in order not to be detected. For example, they don't scan all the ports at once. They do what is called slow port scanning. So I scan two ports today, three ports tomorrow, one port the day after tomorrow, etc., etc. If there is a high value on the target, then it pays to do that, so I can spend a year to discover your vulnerabilities. But the value that I get if the attack is successful is huge. So it's worth doing it. That's what the states do. So in order to scan the ports in a very, very sophisticated way. Now, of course, the situation may change. I have discovered an open port that is vulnerable, and then if I don't exploit it at once, tomorrow you can harden your software and this information will not be valid. So once the vulnerability is found, the attacker acts immediately or almost immediately. This slow port scanning activity is unnoticed for most IDS. As I said to somebody here, we have had the master thesis about slow port scanning. So it's a big issue. There are many different means of reconnaissance that can be detected by intrusion detection systems because they are also learning and get more sophisticated. So it's a cat and mouse game. It's always a cat and mouse game between the attackers and the defenders. In addition to port scanning, you can also use legitimate public data, fora, public databases, public monitoring tools, etc., etc. There are, as I mentioned, CVE, Bugtrack, the very known sources of information about vulnerabilities. You can also use tools and map, ping, TCP, connect, Wireshark, whatever. So, the plan, the reconnaissance, and now the attack. The attack phase where you actually perform this exploit. Okay, so you exploit the vulnerability. Attack is always an exploit of some vulnerability that exists. You usually generate traffic that is capable of exploiting this vulnerability. The most important categories of attacks are denial of service, remote exploits, trojans, backdoor programs, and misuse of legitimate access. In the denial of service, you know, the goal is to not allow anybody to use the service, as the name says. It is possible on anything, routers, servers, firewalls, remote access machines, whatever. It can be specific to a service. You can just deny FTP or HTTP. Or you can deny access to entire machine, any port. There are two categories of these denial of service attacks: resource depletion and malicious packet attacks. Resource depletion attacks, that's, we have mentioned before, SYNFLOOD, for example, is a typical example. So you know TCP connection. You send a packet with a SYN flag set, and the opponent is supposed to answer with acknowledge and SYN. And then you say acknowledge. That would be normal. Now, instead of saying acknowledge, you say SYN again, and do that 1,000,000 times per second. So the victim will try to synchronize all the time and not doing anything else. So that's how you fool TCP very easily. By the way, crafting packets is an extremely easy thing. There are tools for that, many tools actually. So you can falsify, forge the IP address, you can forge ports, you can forge protocol, anything can be crafted. Every kid can do that, to say nothing about the state. So, as we said, internet is insecure by design. So, in resource depletion attacks, you flood a service with an so intensive normal traffic, seen as normal, that legitimate users cannot access it. Then you exhaust finite resources of the server, bandwidth, memory, processor cycles, etc., etc. The example, SYNFLOOD. SMURF is actually an attack that is even worse because it's a multiplication attack. But we don't have time for this. So with a small amount of traffic, you, in this SMURF attack or DNS spoof attack, another kind of attack that is similar, you actually provoke many hosts to launch traffic against the victim, not just you as an attacker. Now, malicious packets is where you actually exploit software vulnerability. If there is a bug, then you craft packet in such a way that you exploit this bug. Typical case is buffer overflow. So if there are no boundary checks for arrays, and there are no boundary checks for arrays in C, for example, C++, many programming languages that are very often used, you have to be very careful about dimensionality of arrays. You have to check whether there is a buffer overflow. Because in this buffer overflow, actually the data that go over the boundaries of arrays may contain pointers to the beginning address of some malicious software. That's how it works. Examples even include attacks against very IDS. There was Snort ICMP. Snort is an IDS, open source IDS. So the early versions of this were vulnerable, and they crashed with this malicious packet launch. So, the input must be properly checked. In SMURF, for example, that we have mentioned, they use spoofed address, also DNS spoof, etc., etc. So they want the response not to go to the attacker, but to another host, which is actually the real victim. Spoofing is easy. There is a tool called Scapy, or there is another HPing 3. So you can do that very easily. Because of that, it's very difficult to defend from denial of service attacks. So that was denial of service. Then we have remote exploits, where we have attacks designed to take advantage of errors in software. And then we compromise and take control of a vulnerable host. It may be the same in many cases as malicious payload traffic denial of service attacks, but we don't completely stop the target. Instead, we penetrate into the system and take control. It may be very simple thing like guest password. So you have a guest user, so early versions of Windows, they have this. In Windows 2000, you had a guest user that could enter the system without a password. And if you forget to stop that, then you are vulnerable. It's also possible buffer overflow and some other exploits like Unicode, cookie poison, SQL injection is very, very typical. So in SQL injection, it's about databases. You can modify the queries, and you modify them in very, very simple way and get, for example, the listing of the whole database or drop table. So there are even jokes about that, comics about drop table. Then we have Trojans and backdoor programs. These programs operate in a similar way. A Trojan, unlike backdoor program, it has an additional activity that is useful, like a word processor or something, but it, in addition to that, it performs some illegal activity, usually establishing a cover channel. So, and through that channel, the attacker takes control over the victim. A backdoor program does the same, but it doesn't have any useful activity. It's just hidden on your system. You don't know about it. About the Trojan, you know about the application that holds the Trojan, but not about the Trojan itself. It's inside. So by installing a backdoor program on a Trojan, an attacker can bypass normal security checks. How can you get infected? Usually by opening some email, but also internally, if you have a malicious software engineer that can add a backdoor program at the design time. Or they can be added as legitimate maintenance programs, but then forgotten. It happens. And this can be exploited because the attacker gets to know about this. These cover channels actually are used for remote control. And typically, these Trojans and backdoor programs listen on a port, like any other application that is normal. Now, through this open port, an attacker takes control, sends commands, etc., etc. So that was a stupid way to do that. A more intelligent way, because this is easy to discover. You just discover that somebody has opened a port without your knowledge. So that's how you detect these Trojans. But since the makers of Trojans also learned that, they don't listen on ports any longer. They listen, they want to detect a sequence of system activities that will trigger the activity of a Trojan. Like log in, open this file, read the news, weather forecast in this order. And that opens the cover channel.